This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Hour number two, what's going on? Tiki and Tierney here on this Tuesday around the country, CBS Sports Radio. From our studios, the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studios, challenging times, Rocket Mortgage prepared to help. So if you need mortgage assistance, contact their team 24/7 at rocketmortgage.com. From their home to yours, the team at Rocket Mortgage is with you. All right, so we'll do a lot of baseball this hour. John Heyman, who hasn't been on the show in a long time. I can't remember. When was the last time we had John Heyman on the show? I think it's been years.
It's at least 2 years.
2 years?
Maybe,
right?
Maybe longer, actually.
Yeah, it's been a long... there was a point we had John all the time. One of the preeminent baseball reporters, voices in the game, give us some thoughts on, what the owners propose, and of course now the players up to 114 in terms of games, and now there's a 50-game proposal that the owners are thinking about. I mean, there's all sorts of things at play. Who knows? But we do know that this is a pivotal week for baseball to get their act together. So, John Heyman, 440 Eastern, 140 Pacific. Right before that, Teak and I will actually get into the baseball waters to set up the conversation with John. The Knicks. All right, so this to me is a really interesting story. Now, the New York Knicks and the players, specifically the Knicks right now, their players are upset that the team has yet to comment and apparently will not comment on the situation. All right. And along with the Spurs, those are the only two teams in the NBA not to offer a blanket statement, an all-encompassing organizational edict, as to on what's transpired here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to get quick separation. If I'm a Knick player, I get it. I'm not happy. I understood. If I'm a Knick employee, I'm not happy either. I'm in that building, and let's face it, they can't say what they want to say because they'll be fired.
Mm-hmm.
And then they will, and I don't even mean if it's like, I don't mean be overtly disrespectful, but even if they voice anything contrary to what James Dolan's putting out there, they will be either fired, relegated to a lesser job, eventually fired, farmed off. It's not going to work out well. We know how that goes. So they got to bite the bullet so they can keep food on the table and pay the mortgage and pay the rent. And that sucks when you have to do that. That is not fun. All right. So, through the players and the employees, I got you back on this. I'm talking to everybody out there that is lumping the Knicks' decision not to weigh in on what's happened as a broad cross-section, like the subtext to their problems, which, by the way, is anything other than racial equality.
Mm-hmm.
And let me just take you back to a little article. If you don't believe me, all right, this is from... May 15, 2018, the undefeated Mark Spears. We've had Mark on the show quite a bit, been a little bit, but we've had him on the show. And Mark wrote a couple of years back, I'm not going to read the article, but I'm going to read you the headline here. And the headline is very simple, but it's powerful. And it says, African Americans dominate executive roles with the Knicks, comma, mm-hmm. a rare situation even in the NBA. And the subtitle, the team has the league's only black president and general manager combination, and that's just the start of it. And then, of course, the article probes more deeply into positions of power and executive spots like Allen Houston with the G League and some other head scouts and some positions of power, right? Since 2000, the Knicks have hired, in terms of minority coaches, Don Chaney, all right, Herb Williams, Lenny Wilkins, Herb Williams again, Isaiah Thomas, Mike Woodson, Derek Fisher, David Fizdale. All right. In terms of white coaches, Larry Brown for 1 year, Mike D'Antoni was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Kurt Rambis and Mike Miller were both interims. All right. They got like a handful of games. And Jeff Hornacek was just a failed experiment that didn't work. When you look, if you want to criticize the Knicks, there is a lot to choose from. Boy, mm-hmm. there's a lot to choose from. how they draft, how they develop, the culture inside the Garden. There's an element of toxicity that I've talked about forever. You know, it's just it's uncomfortableness. You know, there are lawsuits, Anuka Brown Sanders going back 15 years ago with Isaiah Thomas and have sexual harassments. Not that Isaiah was direct, but he was running the show at that point.
Mm-hmm.
A complete circus, right? Unmitigated mess. Throwing money, you know, just bad money at average free agents. The great free agent saying, I'm not coming to play for you. A once proud charter member absolutely being reduced to a 20-year ball of rubble and ash. That's one thing. That's the basketball side, all right? But you got it. You have to be fair to the Knicks. And as I never defend the Knicks. I will defend their record on being proactive, as proactive, and forget about as, more proactive than any other NBA team out there in terms of giving minorities a chance, whether it's on the bench or in the front office making real decisions.
Yeah.
People need to check themselves because this is wrong. This is the wrong slant. This is unfair to the Knicks.
I agree. And look, we had the similar conversation around Dabo Swinney, around the black quarterbacks to start our show, BT. We don't know whether or not James Dolan is going to say something eventually, expresses outrage or expresses solidarity with Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA's statement that was a couple of days ago that said we will not tolerate racism. So we don't know that. We also don't know, BT, if he said anything internally to his players. Now, I doubt that because we probably would have heard something about that. But it's one thing to stand on history, and he does have a history of non-biased hiring in his coaching, which is one of the biggest things why maybe one of the few things that you can applaud the Knicks over the last 20 years, right? Is they're not looking at race as a factor mm-hmm. when it comes to who they want to hire as a head coach.
Yeah, their track record backs that up. That's not us reaching. That is fact.
Exactly. It is what it is. You can't say, well, this guy got the job because he was, you know, he's African-American a coach who was a head coach of the New York Knicks, period. That is what it is. But the problem is that we want to put things in a vacuum. So we don't want to look at history and use that to determine what's happening right now. And right now, we are at a very critical moment, at least it feels like we are, in our society. And sports has taken on an increased role in talking in the rhetoric around the things that are happening in our society. Part of it is because of the athletes, right? The athletes, especially in the NBA, they're just vocal, right? They have social media presences that are as big as any person, individual, influencer, whatever you want to call it, politician in the world. These athletes have a voice.
And guaranteed contracts, so they can say without fear of repercussion.
Exactly right, BT. Yeah. They can say whatever they want. And in fact, they've become so enriched that they've hit a level of power that was previously unattainable for athletes.
Yes, that happens.
Right? It's just like... Yep. Some of the great athletes of prior generations, I'm not talking about the elite superstars that'll be on our consciousness forever, but like the elite players of a generation didn't make enough money to be relevant in our minds now, right? But nowadays, when you look at LeBron James, just like Michael Jordan, is going to be relevant 30 years from now. You know what I mean? 40 years from now. One, because of his success that will continually be championed, but also because of his business acumen, the things that he's done in his community. He started a school in Northeast Ohio, BT. He's like influencing the next generation. So today's athlete has a voice much greater than there's ever been. And some owners, and I think some organizations, especially in the NBA, let that exist. Like, let that be just it. Some of the teams, BT, they put out statements. A lot of them were just benign. You know what I mean? It was just I'm saying what I need to say.
Yeah, denouncing racial inequality and standing together. And yeah, common sense.
It's common sense.
Yeah. For the record, of course I prefer that the Knicks would have put out a statement. Mm-hmm. I would have preferred that why not just put out the statement? But that's separate from chastising or altering what they've done and in terms of how you actually position what they've done, you know?
Here is why, though, it's troublesome is what I'm going to say.
Okay.
Is because of the city that we're talking about.
Yeah.
New York is, one, it was destroyed by this pandemic. this coronavirus pandemic. It's a separate issue, but it forced a lot of furloughs and lost jobs and income inequality across the city. And we already know about the healthcare issues in places like Brooklyn, or was it the Bronx, or wherever. I remember we saw the pictures of the bodies.
Queens.
There it was.
That was Queens.
Putting the bodies in the.
Yeah.
I mean, it was Queens. Disturbing. It really was disturbing. And they have that like Pauper's Island that's sitting out in the middle of the East River, where they're just burying unclaimed bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And it's disturbing and it's sad. And New York City, because of the George Floyd situation over the weekend, is being looooted like crazy, BT. Like,
it's an
Soho,
absolute disaster.
It's a disaster. It's a disgrace.
It's a disgrace.
Mayor de Blasio just instituted a curfew in New York City from 8 p.m. to 5 a.m. every day through the end of this week.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
but let's see if he allows the law enforcement to actually
enforce it. Yeah,
you're right. New York is as bad as I've ever seen it.
It's agreed. A mess. Doesn't it? It feels honestly like it's 30 years ago.
I almost don't want to say this.
I know what you're feeling, because I feel the same thing. I have buddies that are down there. They're down in Soho, and it's like I'm scared for them.
I can't stand what New York has become. I can't stand what it's become.
Yeah, especially in this moment.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I cannot stand what New York City, I'm not talking about the whole state, I'm not talking about up in Albany or Poughkeepsie or Loudonville or Dutchess County. I'm talking about New York City right now is an absolute disgrace. It's a war zone. It's pathetic. It's embarrassing. It's sad. And it's probably going to continue.
New York needs someone to stand up and present calm. And the Knicks are the team that we're going to turn to.
Wouldn't change anything. But
I know it's not going to change anything.
James Dolan's press. If the Knicks put out a press release, wasn't going to keep rioters from getting into Macy's last.
True.
Night. Come
true.
On.
But shouldn't he try? That's the question. No, I think that's what people are saying. Shouldn't he try?
Yeah.
Because it's his city too, and I don't know where he lives. I mean, maybe he doesn't claim New York City.
I think he lives out east, because I'm pretty sure he helicopters to the games. I mean, listen, when you have $1 billion, you live everywhere.
Right. And everybody is out there who had money. They all went east. They're not in the city right now.
I think he helicopters in from the Hamptons, but I could be off on this. I'm pretty sure. You know, again,
I can see both sides of this, BT. I really can.
Again,
because, look, we need an example. We need somebody who's going to, and I mean non-government official, because we had this conversation yesterday. I mean, do we trust our government officials sometimes? I mean, yeah, they say the right things, but do they do the right things? And
I've come to the point I trust family and close friends.
That's right. Family and close friends. And guess who trusted people are in a lot of fans' lives? It's athletes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's organizations. It's tell me what you're doing, because you're going to help guide my thought process on this. And in New York City, it just feels like there's no one standing up and saying anything. Now, there might be, but it's not loud enough that everyone is going to hear. I think if the Knicks, in particular Dolan, who does have a record of quality in hiring, and equality as far as it pertains to what his organization looks like, because it's not just the coaches that have been African American, the front office has been
even
heavily,
more important, the decision makers on the executive level.
You're right. So why stop? Why pause right now? I mean, maybe. And again, I don't know if he's talked to his team.
Well, no, here's the thing, though. He's not going to send. This is not his style. Unless he just caves to public sentiment. Mm-hmm. The reason this got out is he sent an email to his employees. All right, an inter-office email, and it says, "We know that some of you have asked about whether or not our company is going to make a public statement about the killing of George Floyd by a Minneapolis police officer. I want you to know I realize the importance of the issue. Therefore, I want you to understand our internal position.
Mm-hmm.
This is a turbulent time in our country. The coronavirus, civil unrest, blah, 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 taking their toll on our way. We at Madison Square Garden stand by our values of a respectful and peaceful workplace. We always will." I mean, that should be the bare minimum, so that doesn't really move me. "As companies in the business of sports and entertainment, however, we are not any more qualified than anyone else to offer our opinion on social matters. What's important is how we operate. Our companies are committed to upholding values, which include creating a respectful workplace for all. That will never change. What we say to each other matters, and how we treat each other matters, and that's what will get us through this difficult time." Listen, I get it, Tiki. I'm not arguing with you. I prefer
Why can't he make that public? That's my point.
He should have. Of course, right? No, he should have.
Because that says it all right there. That's all he has to do.
I agree.
Is say that.
He should have.
And by the way, he is part of our community, right? You and I are part of the community because we're socially relevant in New York and in New Jersey.
That's why we've opened our mouths and our keyboards.
That's exactly right. You have to.
I feel the responsibility to do it. He doesn't. If anybody's just tuning in, I'm not defending the Knicks not sending out a press release.
Yeah.
That's not what I'm saying. Of course, I wish it was out there. But what I am saying is that don't take them not doing something and then alter 20 years of them doing something that really nobody else in the sport has done. That's unfair.
Yeah.
And remember, let me complete this one thought. I'm sorry, Teague. So I tweeted this on May 31st, and I read this again on the show yesterday. Words generate clicks, but real action promotes change. I don't know if any that is completely applicable to the Knicks. Again, okay, you send out a press release. Great. You get some laudatory clicks. Good job, Knicks. That was solid. You know what really promotes change? Hiring people who have been held down for decades and giving them a chance to flourish in the executive decision-making position like James Dolan has multiple times.
Yeah.
I can't believe I'm defending this guy. I wish he would sell the team. I wish he would just disappear, just evaporate from that building. I don't mean die or get sick. I don't mean that. Just take your billions, go buy an island, and get lost. All right? Just go. But I got to be fair. And the man, as a Knicks fan, it bothers me when people parachute in, the arsonists, as I call them, and misrepresent what he has done of the good. And he has done a lot of good in regard to what I just chronicled. And it's 20 years of chronicling that. I gave you all the names. Name one other team that's done that. I'll wait because you can't.
Yeah.
You can't. There's not a team out there. And I'll tell you something else. You know, you said, you know, the Knicks are the city's team. You know, I don't want to start going off the rails here and throwing arrows because I want to be have solidarity, not like ripping apart things at the seams. Maybe the Yankees need to be a little more outspoken.
It's a great point.
I mean, I know that I'm sure the Yankees put out, but what are the Yankees saying? I don't mean the press release that I'm sure they put out. I think they did, but like, where's that message that is, you know, bouncing off the boroughs from the Bronx to Brooklyn, not Queens, because that's Mets town, but you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Like, what, Manhattan? Why are the Yankees not taking it? The onus shouldn't be folding on the Knicks.
Yeah, it shouldn't be. And the Giants and the Jets and everyone else around should be held to the same standard. But the Knicks are the whipping boys. They get beat up for no reason sometimes, especially when there are moments like this where people want to assume because of James Dolan, right, who that individual is, that they, I don't know, that they should be doing something above and beyond because of him, right? Not because of he's a bad guy, well, we don't know, but because he's been part of this, you know, this organization for so long, and basketball leads, and basketball is not leading in New York City, even though basketball around the country actually has been.
Just as we wrap this up, I want to find out, okay. In this article, within this article in The Undefeated, it's from 2018, again, May 2018, Mark Spears. And he says, I get deeper, he chronicles how there's been a dearth of minority decision makers, et cetera. He says, the Knicks have bucked that trend with Mills, Perry, the assistant GM, and former NBA player Gerald Matkins, assistant GM, G League Westchester Knicks GM, and former Knicks player Allen Houston, player personnel director and ex-NBA player Harold Ellis, and VP for player and organizational development Craig Robinson, who is the brother-in-law of former President Barack Obama. And that's important on this one level, because a lot of people have surmised, and you know what, to be fair, they might be right. I don't know. But a lot of people said, well, Dolan, I guess, donated a couple of $1 million to Trump. I don't know when. I honestly don't know when.
Yeah.
And I can't prove that. But a lot of people have latched that onto that, so I'm sure it's true. But he also hired, you know, somebody of prominence that is in Barack Obama's family. Like, yeah, so it's not, even if it was that he voted for Trump or he gave Trump millions or he's friends with Trump, which might be true, and if that's fine. If that's the case, that's his right, by the way.
Of course.
It's not like he turned his back on, I mean, he hired Obama's brother-in-law.
Well, don't forget, I mean, Trump was a high-moneyed New Yorker.
Yeah, before he ever got into the presidency.
Of course James Dolan knows him. Of course he does. Yep. And he asked him for money. He gave him money.
I hear you. All right. So that's my piece on the Knicks. A lot of problems at the Garden, but I don't think the one that is being most hit upon is the one that we need to focus on. I had to be fair to them today. T, coming up next, how fair would a 50-game Major League Baseball season, how fair would it be, and how plausible is it that it's actually going to come to fruition? Tiki and I will get to that coming up next. Tiki and T, and then John Heyman to back it all up. CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. All righty. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 1-855-212-4227. Sponsored by Geico. Geico's introduced the Geico Give Back. It's a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers that'll last your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for info and eligibility. Up next on deck, now batting, almost batting, John Heyman, MLB Network insider. Get his thoughts on what's going to happen here between, you know, this game of chicken between the owners and the Players Association. I want 82. We'll do 114. How about if we shove 50 down your throat, but you'll get paid the full prorated portion of the pay, which, you know, might be appealing to the players without that percentage deduction, which obviously is a large source of their consternation. You know, I don't.
But really, they're still making a significantly less amount of money because you're only playing 52 games.
Yeah, but they're working less. Yeah,
true, true. But they're at the end of the day, if you're a baseball player, what's more important? And this is why the MLB players and the Players Association proposed 114 games as opposed to, you know, 82 or 80, whatever it was, the MLB. I think it was 82. 82 that MLB suggested, or the 50 that would also create an equal scheduling, right? And so they want more money. At the end of the day, you don't mind as a baseball player playing 100-plus games. You just want to be paid. The problem with the proposal that was given to them by the owners is that they were going to play 82 games, a little bit more than half the season, but be paid like they were playing 30 games. You know what I mean? Yeah. At least for the higher end, especially for the higher end salaried guys.
72.5% if you make $20 million or more.
God, that's a big cut,
man. It's ridiculous.
There's no way you can agree to that. There's absolutely no way.
And the owners know that.
Yeah.
They know that. That's why, again, you shoot for the moon, you might get a star. So maybe 72.5% becomes 55% at some point, or 57%. I don't know. The fact that baseball threw in the deferred payments is an interesting olive branch to me. Mm-hmm. That was smart, tactically placed in there amid some other aggressive asks. But I do think that was smart to insert that. It's a little sign of good faith, I think. And the fact that the unofficial timeline is here. I mean, I can promise you this. I can't guarantee what's going to happen. Nobody can. I can tell you that I do think we'll have a season, although I've gone back and forth in terms of being a little rattled, but I do think we'll have a season. I can't tell you how long for sure, but I can tell you that if you and I are sitting here a week from today, on Tuesday of next week, and they don't have any resolution, then there might not be a season.
Yeah, and if there's no season, BT, what happens to the players? I mean, some the guys who were the Bryce Harpers of the world, the Machados, those guys who have made a ton of money, they're not going to worry. I mean, they're going to go train, they're going to do what they do, they're going to, you know, get a private whatever, go hit balls and do whatever. Mm-hmm. But what about some of these other guys who kind of need to play in order to sustain their lifestyle? What do they do? There's no options that they can, right? There's no other league that they can go play in. The minor league isn't even operational in any capacity.
Oh, you mean now?
Yeah, right now. If they're going to say, I need to make money between, what month is it? It's June. So I need to make money between June/July through December. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, what are they going to do?
Well,
some of them I can't imagine could just do nothing. It's not like they're going to go get a summer job somewhere right now because of what's going on with COVID. So what are they going to do, some of these guys? That's why I think they have to play a season.
There's nowhere to go, really. I mean, even if they wanted to go to Korea and play in the KBO, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, these international leagues, they have limits as to how many Americans you can have on the roster.
That's right.
So I would imagine that's already been filled. Not that you can't maybe dump one American and then bring in, but how many jobs does it actually create?
Yeah.
Not many.
Not many
not
at
many.
All.
There's Winter Bowl in the Dominican Republic, if you want to kind of bridge it over the, you know, before Christmas, maybe in November, and you do that.
It's a lot of time doing nothing, though, BT.
It's a lot of time. And more importantly, it's a lot of time where you're not working on your craft.
Yeah, and then someone's going to come replace you, or if you're a borderline guy. This is why there is such a there's this division between the haves and the have-nots in Major League Baseball right now, because I don't think I even realized it until this came up with the prorated salary, then deducted an additional percentage based on how much money you made.
Oh,
right?
Yeah,
right. I didn't think I realized how few of the guys are making that ton of money.
And but I think it's 65%.
Yes, exactly.
Or 65% are making below the league average.
Yeah, like below
at the league average.
Yeah, exactly. 65%.
Yeah,
it's a lot of players.
That
aren't going to just forego making any money for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
And it's why you can tell their influence was probably more profound when the players sent the proposal back or the counter proposal to the owners, because they need to play. Right.
Yeah.
And again, playing 82 games is good, but it's not nearly enough. I think for some of those guys, they want to play as many games as possible.
Yep.
And to be honest, from a pride standpoint, I would think that the higher paid players do as well. Right. They're not that their legacies are going to be, you know, grossly impacted by a season that's as truncated as this one's going to be. But it is going to be impacted in some regard.
Hey, Teek, listen, you don't think that, you know, Bryce Harper's itching to get out and show Philly what he's going to do in year two?
No doubt.
You don't think Garrett Cole has died to take that slab in the
right.
Bronx and mow down 15 batters?
No doubt.
And show, I mean, you don't think Strasburg's dying to show, hey, here's why I'm worth $35 million and go
That's
defend
exactly
the championship
right.
for the Nats?
That's exactly
I mean,
right.
You don't think Nolan Arenado wants to go and show, hey, this is why I got $35 million. This is why I'm one of the best. Of course.
Yep.
It's intense professional pride. The other thing, too, even if it is only like 50 games, or say in between 82 and let's say 60, let's say 70 games, you know, even if you only play a 70 game season, yeah, asterisk champion, whatever, maybe sure. Record book impacted, yeah, you lose some at bats, it cuts off your numbers at the end of your career, yeah, whatever. But what it can do, and that's why I think you have to play, is even if you have, say, the guy who's 27 years old, who's not a star, never going to be a star, and he hasn't made a ton of money yet. I don't mean, you know, compared to the average mechanic or janitor or, you know, somebody who's scrapping. And really, I mean, to compare to his baseball peers, hasn't made a ton of baseball money yet. And over the course of 70 games this year, he goes out and he smashes 12 home runs and hits .313 and drives in 51 or 41 RBIs, right? That's not going to get him $30 million a year, but it could get him three, if he's a free agent, could get him 3 years, $17 million.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like around $5.5 or $6 million per season would set you up for life if you manage it well.
That's exactly
Even
right.
Even if you don't manage it that you should be relatively set.
There's so much at stake for players. There's obviously a lot at stake for the owners, but they're not worried about this. The value of their
stake,
nothing really. Nothing really. It's a year of losses, and
if
they've all been in business as long as they have been, they've dealt with a year or a quarter or whatever of a loss.
Mm-hmm.
They can deal with it. They can weather it because of the value of the franchise. The players, some of them, a lot of them, probably 60-something% of them cannot.
Yeah,
and that's why this deal, I think it's going to happen. It's just a matter of what it's going to look like.
Let's get some concrete answers, which we will next. John Heyman, MLB Network analyst, joins up. Update time, though. It's Ack. Rich Ackman coming at you. Here's the Ack man. Tonight at 11 Eastern, 8 Pacific, the four remaining teams battle it out in the conclusion of the Challenge Champs versus Stars. Tune in to see who overcomes the toughest challenges in the world and wins a share of $150,000 to donate to the charity of their choice on CBS Sports Network. All right, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio and CBS Sports Network, SiriusXM 206, Twitter, everywhere you want to find us, radio.com, YouTube, Facebook, we're good to go. So we are joined now. It's been about a year or so. Every year he graces us with his stately baseball presence, the great John Heyman, MLB Network insider. And John is back on Tiki and Tierney. What's up, John?
Hey, Brandon and Tiki, how are you guys doing?
Good, man.
Doing
we thought you done big time in us, or what's
no,
going on?
No, once a year. I'm coming on.
I love it.
That schedule.
All right. Well, listen, let me start with this. It really is good to have you back. We need some information. Let me start with the thought that this week something needs to be finalized. Are you fully on board with that, or at least in terms of like the concept and eventually maybe a further date, you know, hammered out? But at least the general parameters need to be agreed upon this week at the latest. Do you agree?
Yeah, I would say pretty close. I mean, if it goes a day or two past this week, I'll live with that. Both sides understand that they need to play baseball if the health data allow it and get on that field, work out a deal. You know, I believe, I'm not going to say guarantee, I believe they will figure it out some way, somehow, because they know the alternative is terrible for the game. Mm-hmm. Got to play, and they understand that. That said, we know there hasn't been any progress to this point. That's a little disappointing, but they need a harder deadline. Yesterday was a soft deadline, very soft, and, you know, no one pays attention to that soft deadline.
Yeah. Now, John, now is it we assume that it's a little bit contentious because we hear the players being loud and angry in some of their rhetoric. But is it actually a contentious discussion between the players and the owners here?
I would say so. I think right now they just do not see eye to eye, and they have one big hurdle to get past, and that is that the players' belief was that the March 26th agreement said that they were going to get prorated pay, the regular salary per game, if they played. Now, the MLB side does not see it that way. They say that that was predicated on there being fans in attendance at games. And, you know, it's unfortunate that there was a bit ambiguous. There's a gray area. It's uncertain there, but they need to get past that now, and they need to compromise and figure it out. My reading of that document would be, and I'm not a lawyer, is that it doesn't really guarantee prorated pay no matter what. So I do understand the player's position, that they're the ones going out there taking a chance. It won't be as much fun, certainly, playing without fans there and going through all the health protocols and disturbing the routine, and I get it. And, you know, I think the owners have to understand they're going to lose money this year, and the owners need to work it out. That said, I don't think the prorated pay was guaranteed absolutely in that contract of March 26th.
So that's John Heyman, MLB Network analyst, with us here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. So, John, we've had three situations floated. The 82, the 114, and now the 50. Which of the three seems most viable? And listen, I know there's probably a chance it's none of the three. It's probably somewhere in between. But if you had to really, you know, narrow it down and put on a piece of paper your guess as to exactly how many games there is, what do you think there's going to be?
I think the 82 games will be closer. That said, I don't think that sliding scale is going to work, and I get it. I think that concept makes some sense, but the pay cuts were just way too drastic for the players. So I think they need to negotiate that and figure it out. The 50 games, I think, is a negotiating tactic. In that agreement, it says that Rob Manfred can start baseball at any number of games at prorated. And just saying, well, we can start at 40 or 50 games, I mean, I think that would result in an absolute war because the players obviously do not want to come back and play for less than one-third of their pay if it's 50 games. So I just don't think he would do that. I think Rob Manfred is understanding that he needs the players. He needs to work with the players. The players are the game, and they need to work it out. And let's look at Rob Manfred's track record. He's been there for 25 years. There's been no work stoppage of even a day. I mean, I've covered baseball longer than 25 years, and we had work stoppages before that. So I think his track record suggests they will get it done. The owners may not be thrilled. In the end, they're going to lose money. If they cancel the season, they're going to lose a ton of money. If they play and pay them a reasonable rate, they're still going to lose a lot of money. But for the good of the game, I think most of them understand that they need to play. I saw the story that said some are willing to just can the season and say forget about it. Some owners, I mean, I bet there's one or two or three that feel that way, but it would take eight to feel that way for the season to end. So I do think the vast majority of owners want to play, and they have to know they're going to lose money either way, and that's just the way it goes. It's a pandemic and a once-in-a-lifetime occurrence, hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah, John, do you think that the players feel that same way? Because obviously in any negotiation, it's about leverage, and it feels like there's not much of it other than them saying we're not going to play. But BT and I were just having this discussion because so many of them, 60 or so percent, aren't making, you know, millions and millions of dollars.
Right.
They really don't have the leverage to negotiate anything by and large. Am I reading that correctly?
You're right. About 65% have a salary of $1 million or less. That would be surprising to people who hear about Garrett Cole and Mike Trout and all of those players. But you know what? I think that players have some hidden leverage that people don't realize. In that first agreement, the players got $170 million to divide. So even the players who are at the minimum still got close to $200,000 apiece. So they had money to tide them over. They did win the service time, whether it was a season or not, in that agreement, so they still will get the service time, which was a huge, huge plus for the players. And you know, ultimately, I think it's going to be on the owners, who at least publicly, who are in baseball for their lives, presumably, unless they sell the team, that they need to get it done. So I do think that the players do have some leverage here. You know, they want to play. They definitely do not want to get rid of the season. They want to get going. But I do think that the players have leverage. That said, again, I don't think the prorated pay was guaranteed in that agreement of March 26th.
You know, John, real quickly, BT, before you follow up something.
Yeah, sure.
We had Trevor Bauer on a week ago, a week and a half ago or so, and he kept saying, you know, we're gonna take care of each other, right? The players will find a way. And I think that's kind of what he was alluding to, is that if there isn't a game, the guys who are making a ton of money are going to help out some of these guys. Is that part of this conversation from a player perspective? You know, forget the owner perspective, but from a player perspective, is that legitimate? That's what I was inferring from what he was saying. I'm not sure he was actually implying that, but that's what I took away from it.
Yeah, you know, it was nice to see David Price step up and say that he would give money to the Dodgers minor leaguers, and I'm sure there's some other players that we aren't aware about that are helping out. But, you know, ultimately, I don't think all the – you know, it's nice that he says that. It's good that they say they're sticking together. But I don't know how many David Prices there are. And there will be some players who will be financially hurt quite a bit by this. I mean, I saw an interview with Tommy Pham. I think Bob Nightingale did it, in which Tommy Pham, you know, he was kind of a late bloomer. He's a star player now and had a really big salary for the first time this year coming up, and you know, he's not getting paid, and he didn't see the pandemic coming. Nobody did, so he went out and bought a car and a fancy place in downtown San Diego, and he's making nothing. So I mean, there are a lot of players out there, you know, not just Tommy Pham's of the world, but the guys that you mentioned, there's 65% who make a million or less, and let's keep in mind, these are relatively short careers compared to your other lines of work. While the salaries are high, at some point, you know, you got to be in the big leagues for 3 years before you get the very high salary. And how many players play really long 10-year-plus careers? So, you know, there are players that are going to be hurting. I don't know if there are enough David Prices to go around to take care of all of them. But that said, I don't know that the players are going to be desperate. I think they're sticking together to this point, and they just need to compromise. I do think they need to figure out a way to get the season going, because both sides need to compromise. And so far, we're not seeing any compromising to this point.
So that's John Heyman, Major League Baseball Network analyst, with us here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. You know, John, I said this to Tiki, I think it was yesterday, and I think I said it last week as well. One thing that's a real problem here for baseball, let's say if this is butchered, worst case scenario, which I'm with you, I don't think that happens, but I also didn't think they were going to cancel the World Series back in 94. And one thing that I think would be very foolhardy to lean on, like, okay, so eventually baseball came back from the cancellation because of the home run chase. We were all infatuated with that, and it gripped the nation, blah, blah, blah. We are so desensitized, though, to the home run now. It's such a common part of the game. Every night it's 7-6, 9-5, 10-4. Every night there's 3-4 home runs seemingly in every game. If they butchered this and baseball is not played this year,
I don't think there's anything, unlike 94 with the home run a couple of years after that, that can throw in a lifeline, and I think the damage would be irreparable, and I think baseball wouldn't be dead. It would still exist, but it would be dead the way we view it compared to today. Do you agree with that assertion?
Yeah, I don't know about that. It would be a disaster. I don't think there's any question about it. Some ownership people that I talk to are saying that if the players don't figure out a way to compromise and they cancel the season, they're going to lose a lot of money, so much money that the free agency will never be the same. There won't be $200 million payrolls. They'll be lucky if there's $100 million payrolls. It's going to be a war, and it's going to be ugly for the players, for the owners, and for the fans. You know, I don't know what to bring baseball back after this, but they have to figure it out. It's not good what's gone on. I mean, it's clearly the players are going to take a significant cut. I mean, whether that's half or more, and it's likely to be half or more, and the owners are going to take losses. I think all the owners made money except for the Marlins owner, Bruce Sherman, last year. I think that's fair to say. That's what Forbes said, and I believe that. And mm-hmm. I think they've made money the last several years. They've done quite well. But I believe they will all lose money this year if they play or if they don't play. And they just have to understand that it's bigger than them. It's bigger than their bottom line. And they have to really start thinking about the good of the game and not worry quite so much about the bottom line. Now, we're still in negotiation. We still have days to go, and we don't have that hard deadline yet. Maybe they need to set one. Maybe ultimately they need to send it to an arbitrator, a mediator, for them to figure it out because, as I said, I don't see progress at this point. The,
gotcha.
The owners made an offer, and the players then respond, which was not going to be an offer that was going to get it done, but it was an opening offer. The players responded by moving in the other direction. There was no compromise in their offer. So we're not in a good way right now, and time is running short, as you guys point out.
And as it is for the segment. Great stuff, though, John. Great information. Appreciate you, buddy. We'll see you in another year. Thank you, John.
All right.
All right, man. John Heyman, MLB Network Insider. Coming up, how about this? An unlikely source showing young quarterbacks how to lead in this unusual pandemic times. Never guess who it is and what he's doing. We'll hit that coming up next.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up. And the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.